Hey guys, thank you for joining us for another episode, the second episode of Vaping and Venting. My name is Kermit Lowry, of course. I'm your host. And today we have on Nick Orlando. How are you, Nick?
Doing great. How about you?
Doing fantastic. Of course, we're familiar with each other recently over the last few months. But for our viewers who don't know Nick, Nick is the president of the Florida Smoke Free Association. And then he is also a shop owner himself. So he owns three or four locations.
Four
down in the Florida area, west coast of Florida, correct?
Correct.
Yep. So awesome, Nick. Well, thanks for hopping on here. You know, I kind of start out all these interviews by asking everyone, how did you kind of get into the vape world? I know you guys are predominantly a vape shop. So how did we get here? I'm sure there's a long story that involves in no way you attempting to be in the vape world, but how'd you get where you are today?
So started using the product approximately 2008. At the time, there were no vape shops or anything around that I knew of. Using the product out of China, ran into a guy here that had it, and he told me where to order it. Little small stick devices, Sigalikes is what they're called. Used those for a while, was coaching soccer. Parents saw me using the device, asked me where I got it. It worked. I started using the product. So I told my wife, I said, Dolores, we need to open a store. This stuff gets people off cigarettes. And she said, there's no way. It's just as bad as smoking. So she went on a year-long trek to find out how bad these products were. And about a year and a half later, she said, you know what? There's nothing wrong with these things. They're actually better. Maybe we should open a store. So we opened our first store in 2013, started putting the wheels in motion around 2012. But 2013, we actually got the doors open and been open ever since. But it was slow rolling at first. Nobody knew what it was. They'd stick their head in and go, hey, what is this stuff? So we'd explain to them. And more people started trying it here in Largo, Florida. And it started to grow. We had a community. People would come in, hang out. We'd be open until 11 at night and just sharing stories about how this product helped them get off cigarettes. And they'd bring friends with them and try to get them off cigarettes. And over time, we found we helped thousands of people quit smoking, and we created a small community in our area. Well, obviously, as you know by now, it started growing further and further. Devices, technology got better. And as that happened, our product line grew. At the time, we were mixing e-liquid on site because we couldn't find any manufacturers to the level that we wanted. So we were mixing on site. And when in 2016, the deeming regs dropped, we stopped immediately mixing on site. And we went to everybody who was making it at that time. And
nice.
In 2014, the Florida Smoke Free Association was formed. We were members at the time. And as time went on, the president and the vice president stepped down. I became the president. And over the course, we've had some turnover and change. I've been vice president, president. My wife's the treasurer, and we have a board of seven now, and we're the ones fighting for the rights to keep these products alive in Florida. We've also been to other states as well and spoken on behalf of the industry. We've been to D.C. That's kind of where we are now.
Yeah, so we'll certainly get into the Florida Smoke Free stuff, but kind of to rewind back, so you started out as a smoker. Right. And then, you know, you caught on to this product, you found out about it, and you became an evangelist effectively, and very quickly became not only an evangelist for your own products, but then, you know, for the industry as a whole and, you know, for the state, which is fantastic. So, you're up to four locations, you know, you had, or you started out with one, obviously, you know, 10 years ago or so. And then you've grown to four. So talk to me a little bit about that. How has that growth occurred? You know, I know a lot of shop owners think about opening another store. Is it something you recommend? What are your best tips there and all that?
So we were up as high as we've done 11 total store builds over the course of time. At one point we were in malls. but the industry kind of changed so much in the landscape, as well as the product lines changing and funding the fight, because we keep talking about the organization, but somebody had to fund all that. And there were a small group of us that had to fund it. That has cost quite a bit of money. And when the stores are open to fund the organization, it's a little rough, but the landscape now, I would say, is okay to open if you open with the right product. We're almost at a point where we need to reset and get back into tobacco harm reduction. And if that's your passion, it's probably a good time. But if your passion is to make the almighty dollar and sell everything that's hot and hype, it's probably not a good time, because those are the items most of our states throughout the country are going after. So be cautious. You have to know what you're getting into in tobacco harm reduction and reducing cigarette use. And I think we're almost to that reset point now.
Yeah. So you in your stores, it's definitely an emphasis on the vape side, getting them on mods and not even a focus on the disposables. It's more on that side, versus the alternative products. Right.
Now, and we do have those, because to survive, we had to have them. Because all the alternative product stores started picking up vapes. So it's like, wait a minute, I'm sending these people down the road, my long-term clients that I've had for 10, 12 years, down the road to buy products, alternative products in a smoke shop or whatever, and they have vapes. So now I'm sending customers down the road and feeding that store. So we started, you know, talking to our clients, asking, hey, you know, what kind of products would you use? And once they told us that they're going to these other stores and buying them, because it'd come back, you know, 6 months later and go, hey, I need a coil. The store you sent me to doesn't have it. I'm like, where you been? I haven't seen you. And they say, well, we've just been shopping there, kind of the one-stop shop. I'm like, what do you buy? So we started picking up those products in a very small quantities to be able to afford our clients that we've had for so long the opportunity to purchase those. But it's, you know, and with in Florida, where medicinal THC stores, they get flower, they need batteries for their liquid or whatever product delivery they choose. So we started picking up those products to support those delivery mechanisms or systems.
Mm-hmm. And what percentage of your sales do you say are those alternative products?
I'd say 20% of our sales, maybe 30%, but it's a very low margin, because that's not my bread and butter. When you grow with the industry, I'm very well versed on the vapor industry. And it's very uncomfortable for me to sell, because I haven't used these products since 1985. So they've changed and evolved since then. So when we're talking about nails and dabs and this and that, I don't know what all that is. I got an idea, but I can't sell it with confidence to somebody unless they know what they want when they walk in the door. Now, my staff can, and I have a great staff that understands that. But, so my side is the vapor side, but we're 20 to 30% on the other side, like CBD, dog treats and gummies and those types of things for our clients that were already buying it somewhere. We picked it up for sleep or pain or whatever they use it for.
Yeah. You didn't want to be the educator and then send them off to another shop where they end up buying, you know, not only their alternative products, but their coil, their mod, their juice, right?
By then they know what they want, right?
Yeah, exactly. So you did the hard part up front until they have another issue where they can't, you know, that other shop that was carrying everything, you know, can't answer or can't tell them what the proper coil is or whatever it is. So no, understood. I think it, you know, at this point, you know, there's definitely there's tons of merit and the tobacco free side and everything, but I think a small selection is kind of needed in these times. Absolutely. For sure, for the reason you listed. So fantastic. You know, a lot of these shops are going to much more of the hybrid side, but it is always refreshing to see someone staying true to the original fight, right? and certainly, you know, you're not only what you're doing in your shop, but your body of work with the Florida Smoke Free speaks on that as well. So kind of moving into that, I guess, you know, tell us a little bit about, you know, what's been going on legislature wise with the Florida Smoke Free. I know you guys have had a lot of, you know, this has been a pivotal year. Every year is a pivotal year, right? But this year especially. So tell me a little bit about what's going on, you know, there.
So total overall, we've had 48 times where we've had to go up and deal with bad legislation. This year, you saw the bills rolling across the country, PMTA registry bills, and they were all pretty much cookie cutter bills. So they were all the same. Florida took it and did amendments and maybe tailored it just a little bit to remove open systems and basically strip the list that was to nothing and put it in the attorney general's hands to build a list SKU by SKU to be able to be put on or banned or restricted in any way. So, you know, most products, as you and I both know, when we're talking about disposable or single use items, don't have a very long shelf life in the retailer. So mm-hmm. if it takes the attorney general or her team to go through a rules committee, and I am told it takes 6 months, maybe by that time the product is identified, it's probably been on the shelf for a month. Then they have to go through this process of getting it placed on the registry through a rules committee. And during that process, the owner of the product, as well as public, can make comment on it and go to a mediator to say why it shouldn't be on the list. By the time this process drags out, the product is no longer valid anyway, so they place it on the list and the product's not even being sold because most of those retailers that sell those single-use products are so fast-moving.
Right? It's so cyclical. Yeah.
So that's basically the amendment or the amended bill that Florida has now. It has not been signed. We've asked for a veto if possible. The governor is in support of the amended language. He thinks, and he kind of did it for us as an industry to stay open because we can by putting open systems on a whole sidebar. E-liquid coils, devices cannot be touched. It's single-use products that do not have a PMTA registry or a stay that could potentially be put on a list. So he basically mm-hmm. took the whole list down to nothing. Whereas we started with a list of every damn vape product that we've ever seen, it's been taken down to nothing. So we consider that a win. And if he vetoes it, it's even a win. So either way we go, once the bill is called or signed or vetoed, we consider it a win because we're already strategizing for next year. We've got some language that we want to put forth to our legislators to help make it even better for everybody in the industry in the state of Florida, because we've had a lot of companies move here from Canada, from other parts of the U.S. to bring their manufacturing, their employees, and their economic activity here. Mm-hmm. And the governor understands that. He's like, wait a minute, a total overall, we're looking at about not just vapor alone, but when we're talking about alternative and delivery, things like that, when we're talking about delivery, we're bringing $4 billion worth of economic activity total to the state. And we had to say, we couldn't go without saying, that the batteries that are identified as ENDS devices, because they could be used for nicotine delivery, are also used in the medicinal hemp side to deliver their carts, those batteries would have been banned. And when we took the governor, look, veterans depend on this product as well. So we have the vapor side. But when you're talking about those little 510 batteries that they use to deliver their medicinal marijuana, it takes away that product from your vets. And they're going to be pretty pissed off too. So don't think about this globally and how it affects everything. And his office took it into consideration as well.
Well, at least Florida seems to be coming to this with a little sensibility. Maybe not originally, right? But at least they're, you know, meet in the middle, some type of compromise, right? Which I think is something we discussed in a previous conversation. Is what's happening is this same, the same general bill being submitted in most of these same states, like, you know, from Tennessee to Florida to Georgia? Is it the same general bill? And then it really depends on the advocacy groups to either revise it or have it struck in total? Or is it a different bill being submitted, you know, from the start at each of these states?
The meat and potatoes of the bill is the same. And
same.
Where it came from, it originates from big tobacco. We know that. We've tracked it back. Other states have done the same. And then it goes to the Retail Federation or the likes of that in their state, who then has the AG deal with it, who then assigns sponsors to those bills or asks sponsors to take up those bills and push them through legislature. That is the path we've seen happen. So they're pretty much cookie cutter. There's been some tailoring along the way that maybe the original bills were filed, and once the original drafter, meaning big tobacco, comes finds that, they try to close those loopholes. So as they're rolling out, you're seeing small little nuances to it, but it's the same cookie cutter bill, essentially. Basically,
same.
Banning vapor, you know, our vapor products that aren't PMTA approved, period. And that's the gist of the whole bill. So you got to get in and work with your governor, work with, you know, you can mess with legislature and try to have friendlies, but we proved this year that even doing that, depending on who the AG is and their relationship and the bill sponsors, this thing moves through like a freight train. So you almost have to go to the head office that's going to ultimately sign the bill, spend your finances there, spend your time there, because it will ultimately get there and you can't do anything to stop it. Once we realized that, our great lobby team went right to them. And we started talking about it then, because there's no stopping it, because there's so many dangling carrots out there in regards to, hey, you know, if you support this bill, you could be the next AG. Or, you know, when we're talking about leadership, their next step is being a bargaining tool for supporting and sponsoring these bills. And it's politics, man. That's just what it is.
Yeah.
It's politics and money. And when you have money that funds the politics, you get to make them up. So that's where we're at. But voices are broad too. I mean, if an organization get a good group of voices and send those emails and you know, constantly beat the phone lines, it works. But you need finances to support that.
Certainly. I know you guys. I mean, certainly Florida does it as strong as anyone on the advocacy side. Whenever this was all going down a month or two ago, I know you specifically, Ernesto, were very strong and very public with the outcry to, hey, email, you know, the AG, email the legislatures. I think that certainly does make a difference, hearing from the constituents in that state, not only the shops, but also the end users, right? Who this affects everybody. Not at the end of the day, monetarily, it affects the shops more. But you know, day-to-day basis, there's so many more harmful things that occur, to the consumer whenever they don't have access to these vape products.
Yep. And you know, the availability is reduced greatly. And I think that's the sum of it, right? Once the consumer realizes that, because they never had to fight to smoke, right?
Yeah.
So they're like, why do I have to fight to vape? And it's, you got to explain it to them when they come in your doors. It's like, you know, we're being attacked. This product that you like and choose as an adult freedom is being attacked on a regular basis. You have to let your local legislators and officials know that this is something you want to use instead of combustible tobacco. And it's unfortunate. Yeah. You have to. I mean, and what sucks is, you know, you don't get Ford and Chevy and Dodge and those big boys to have to, you don't got to fight for them, right? You don't have to fight for tobacco either. Tobacco's got their own thing. They're solid. They make enough money. They've made enough money. And they could.
I think I read somewhere the other day that there's been 300 something new cigarettes approved in the last few years. And very little, if any, vape items, you know?
Well, the vape items approved are theirs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the 18 approved vape items, yeah, exactly, are owned by them. Right. So what would you say is some of the things that, you know, I know you guys have worked with other states, but other states need to be kind of following suit with what Florida's doing to have maybe a little bit more success. How have you guys found so much success? Is it going straight to that AG? You know, is it money? Is it just, you know, getting as many members as possible, or a mix of everything?
It's damn sure not the money, because we don't have enough of that.
Understood.
But I think it's the consistency, right? We've maintained, and each state is different because they have different structure and different ways their bills move and legislatures and different relationships. What has worked for us is for the last 10 years, remaining consistent with one lobbyist, paying them year-round, staying engaged year-round. Like, we're at a session now, and I'm going to events with senators, so they get FaceTime with me, so they know who I am when I go talk. It's putting forth the effort, taking time away from your business, which sucks. Just go out and meet with people, do volunteer events, go to their mixers, go to their open houses, go to their town hall meetings. It's consistent, and that commitment to doing that is what later pays off.
You'd rather take the time away from the business today than not have the business in a couple of years.
You have to have a team to be able to do that. I'm very fortunate. My team that I have in the stores, one of them being my son and my partners, they kind of run that piece, right? So I can step away. Now, at night, I go back and I work. But during the day, if I have to go to Tallahassee, that's a 4.5-4 hour ride one way, to spend 2 or 3 hours to drive back 4 hours. So that's a whole day shot. But I'm fortunate enough to have a good group of people that continue to work and run the stores and bounce things off of me and understand what I have to do for the bigger picture. But, you know, our board is everybody takes a little piece. They're staying very engaged. We still have weekly Zooms. We have lobby Zooms with us every week. We talk about strategies. We talk about plans. We talk about how are we going to do this and what do we need to do, building our platform, building our membership. It doesn't stop. And the biggest thing that I used to see is we used to remain reactive. We have to get proactive. You got to get proactive. Start now for next session. There were states that have a year of session and then they're off a year. Then they go back. That would be very tough for me. But you have to stay engaged during that off year. You have to keep your lobbyists. You can't just hire a lobbyist when the place is on fire, right? You got to do things to prevent the fire from ever starting. And that is the mentality we've had, thankfully, and been able to do here, is stay engaged throughout the year. Just because we have an off season, we're only in session 60 days. If Florida Smoke Free did that 60 days and then told our lobbyists, hey, we'll catch up to you next year when session starts, we're not going to pay you and we're not going to be engaged, but we'll come back in next year, maybe a month before our session starts. So I'll engage you for 90 days. It doesn't work, financially, it's important to have that membership, to have that financial support, or you got to take it. Your board members have to take it and fund the fight, which is what we have done here for so long. Our board members and a few select store owners funded this entire fight for a long time. This year, we finally started driving membership. We were at 50 at the beginning of 2022, and we're at 120 now, members.
Well, with that being said, if you are in Florida, join Florida Smoke Free Association. I mean, they're fighting the good fight for you. And Nick doesn't need to take massive amounts of money from his pockets anymore. We should all be working together on this. So
it's crazy. You paid a volunteer.
Yeah, exactly. You're doing the most work and putting in the most money, paying the most taxes, basically.
We do not. What needs to be said, though, nobody on the board gets a paycheck, not one dime. So,
yeah, you're losing money by doing it. But in the long run, you know. Yeah. It's what has to be done so that you can make money too, you know?
It's a passion. It's a passion for me. It's personal for me, right? Mm-hmm. We could sit here and talk about why I do it and all this, and I bring people along and keep their doors open for the last 10 years that never gave us a dime, don't even care, keep the blinders on, just keep making money. But at the end of the day, it's personal for me. So I just say to those that haven't joined, join. We need your help. And if you don't, welcome aboard, because we're going to keep fighting anyway, because I'm personal. That's it.
Definitely. Yeah. And if you're not, you know, if you're not in Florida as well, join your local state advocacy group. You know, use Lifelong POS's donation functionality to get donations going to your local advocacy group. And if there's a group you want Lifelong POS to donate to, reach out to us and we can see what we can do. We recently started doing that over the last, you know, 4 or 5 months. Yep. And Florida Smoke Free was on the list. So, well, awesome, Nick. Anything else that you want to share with our audience before hopping off?
Not really.
Oh, well, I guess question, if they do want to join Florida Smoke Free, where are they going? What website?
flsmokefree.org.
Okay. And they can make a donation there or become a member.
Yep. And we got some cool things going on. You mentioned Ernesto, and he and Jonathan are IT guys. Everybody takes a role. And those guys are sharp. So we're going to
Jonathan over at Gentleman's Straw.
Yeah. Yeah. Jonathan. Okay. Yeah.
Yep. He's a client of ours.
He and Ernesto are, building this platform where you will be able, you being a member, will be able to advertise on that platform to members. You can run deals and sales, and you'll be, all your contact business card will be on there, and the membership will be listed and maintained. It's a pretty cool website, and I'm looking forward to that.
Great for B2B, right? Wholesalers, POS companies, insurance guys. They need to be becoming a member and getting active. It's I've certainly, from my you know, small donations I've made to different groups, they've definitely showed the appreciation, and we've definitely had people reach out because of those donations. So any of you businesses that sell you know, to the smoke and vape world, get active as well, because I mean, these people notice who is who's helping and assisting the fight, and you know, who's just kind of collecting a paycheck.
And it's going to get a little more noticeable. I mean, people are really starting to turn as they're getting involved. Like shop owners that are joining our organization are being told, hey, maybe you want to support those that support you to keep your doors open. So we've got accountants.
Exactly.
We've got real estate, commercial real estate affiliate members, accountants. We've got you guys, POS. I mean, Lifelong's been on board, and we've got quite a few different support groups and affiliates to the industry that have decided, hey, instead of putting up the marketing on the billboard, let me join an organization and contribute to the right cause, and you get paid back, because sometimes it just pays for your membership.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, our marketing dollars have been well spent putting them to advocacy versus Facebook ads or you know, something else. It's not only going to a great cause, but also getting you in front of your exact clientele, you know, your ideal customer base. So
yeah, you get a bunch of responsible business owners to sign up for Lifelong.
It helps out tremendously. I mean, you know, we did Tennessee Smoke Free, and I've got, you know, a 9 location we've talked to. We've already signed with 4 additional chains.
Danny,
I think that
Lisa, those are good people.
Yeah. Danny's a good friend and big supporter of us. So, well, awesome, Nick. We'll definitely appreciate the time today. And thank you everybody for listening to the second episode of Vaping and Venting. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with the third episode. So thank y'all.
Thank you, Kermit.
Have a great day.